begin with me walking into the camera, I guess. It seems to be working. The story so far, should you remember from the last lecture, I'm introducing the principles and the basics of cartography because these are important and underlie a great deal of what's going to come in terms of GIS. I introduced four topics of being of importance, and we've done two. Geodesy, the figure of the Earth, the size and shape of the Earth, and we all resolved that the oblate ellipsoid with the dimensions of WGS 84 is probably the preferred for most mapping purposes, but we have to live with many more. The second topic is scale. We noticed the importance of the representative fraction and how to calculate it, and we noted that in terms of GIS, maps appear to be scaleless, but of course scale always stamps itself onto data, so data are always captured at any particular scale, and we'll revisit this a little bit later on in Chapter 4. So two more topics to come before I'm done with the basics of cartography. Going to do those today, map projections and coordinate systems. We ended up with the slide after this one, but by way of review, we just covered geographic coordinates. I showed you me standing on the Greenwich Meridian. We noticed that geographic coordinates of the Earth's latitude and longitude system ranges from 90 degrees south to 90 degrees north in latitude, 180 degrees west to 180 degrees east in longitude. A line with constant latitude running east-west, we call that a parallel. We're going to meet several parallels in the course of learning about map projections. A line with constant longitude running from the North Pole to the South Pole is called a meridian. And we've already met the prime meridian. We're going to meet some other meridians called central meridians today, which are of importance. The zero longitude meridian is called the prime meridian, passes through Greenwich, England. And as we saw, the actual location of the prime meridian, the detailed location as far as the ellipsoid is concerned, depends upon our choice of the Earth model. So if we move and change between Earth models, we move the locations and elevations of features on the Earth. And the grid of parallels and meridians shown on lines on a map is called a graticule. And a graticule you'll find on almost any atlas map or any globe. It can be extremely handy for finding where you are as far as the map is concerned and using it for navigation. All right, let's go back to the stuff I talked about in terms of data and databases and information. So ultimately, all geographic information resolves to coordinates. It resolves to points on the ground in terms of their, in this case, latitude and longitude. So just as we've drawn the outline here of Africa, we might be able to select some little tiny piece of that outline and look at it and look at the actual values and see whether they what they correspond to, and notice that it's important that we remember the order that we put X and Y in. Latitude and longitude are like X and Y. We'll meet alternatives in just a second. But here, for example, as we're crossing the equator, we're seeing the north-south dimension, the latitude going from positive to negative, so we're crossing the equator in this particular instance, and this implies that the north-south value, the latitude is coming first, and the longitude is coming second. So these are longitudes east, and we can see we estimate we're out about 9 here just by looking at the graticule on this map. Okay, so this is actually part of the World Data Bank 1 listing of coordinates for the coastline of Africa. So ultimately, any map that we can think of can be resolved into a set of coordinates, and those coordinates are placed into files. All we need to do is to get the information out of the files in the correct order. Okay, let's move on to the next step. Now let's pick up my handy prop that I'm going to use many times today, my Christmas tree globe. Okay, when we put the Earth through the scale transformation, we end up with what's still a three-dimensional object. So this is a representation of the Earth. It's just been shrunk down quite a good deal. As we've seen, it's about 1 to 177 million to get it to this size. But it's not flat. Only in the last few years have they designed computer screens or television screens capable of showing three-dimensional objects in stereo and 3D. We haven't developed yet mapping algorithms that work in 3D. But we do have pretty good algorithms that work in 2D. And there are lots of good reasons why it's preferable to work in 2D. For example, when I hold that up and you look at it, if that is a projection, indeed it is a projection as you just look at it, you can only see one side of the globe at a time. But when I project it onto a globe, I can see the whole Earth at once. So I can automatically see more information than I'm capable of seeing with my own eyes. So that next transformation from the scaled globe to the flat map is the map projection transformation. So the transformation of a spherical or ellipsoidal Earth, and we do both types in cartography, onto a flat map is called a map projection. And the map projection can be onto a flat surface, or what we call a developable surface, that can be either flat to begin with, or it can be made flat by cutting, such as a cylinder or a cone, and we'll look at those in just a second. And if the globe, after scaling, cuts through the surface, projection is called secant, and I've got some examples of this in just a minute. Secant literally means cutting. And lines where the cut takes place or where the Earth touches the globe have no projection distortion. Now, that's really quite an important property. One of the things that happens when we take a spherical form or an ellipsoidal form and project it onto a flat surface is we distort the Earth. We cannot project without distorting the Earth, but we can control where the distortion is at a minimum. And that's largely what map projection selection is all about. Let's try and avoid dropping that. Okay, good. All right, three different ways of producing a map projection other than in the abstract. And of course, many map projections are actually formulas. They're not, there's no analog to them. But let's start with the simple ones for which there are analogs. And I'll take out my analog props here. So one of the simplest ways we can do a map projection is to simply hold the globe up against a flat surface, to get a light source, or an equivalent of a light source, and to project the map onto the surface. Okay, it's backwards, then I'll just look at the back of this instead of the front, in which case it comes out the right way. Okay, so that's a projection from a surface onto a flat plane. We call these azimuthal projections because they're direct projections of points on the sphere or the ellipsoid onto the flat plane. If I start with a pole, for example, I can project an entire hemisphere. Unfortunately, I can't do both hemispheres onto an azimuthal. I'd need to use two projections to do that. Okay, a second way to do a map projection onto a flat surface is to wrap the surface. I'm going to go out of the camera range here. Let me try and not do that. Do it in the camera range. I can wrap my surface around the globe like this in a cylinder. Put my source of illumination back inside the globe, turn it on, and you can see that the map projects up onto the cylinder. If I then trace that over and unraveled the map, I would have a cylindrical projection. Okay, so the second type of projection is onto a cylinder, I can then unravel. One thing to note about a cylindrical projection is that when I wrap this around the Earth, it touches every place along, in this case, the equator, at the same time. At those points of tangency, there is no distortion. The map and the globe are exactly the same. So, for example, all the graticule lines meet at right angles along those. That's not necessarily the case elsewhere on the map. Okay, so cylindrical projections are developed from a cylinder. A conic projection, I can take my developable form, make it into a sort of little hat. This gets hardest now, I need extra fingers here. Put my Earth up inside the cone and project out onto the cone. Okay, that's not very good, let's orient it a little better. Project outwards onto the cone, and now I have a conic projection. Okay, if I've aligned the North Pole up with the line of the axis of my cone, my parallels are going to make circles going outwards on the cone, and my meridians are going to be straight lines radiating outwards from the pole. When I then unwrap this, I'm going to end up with something that looks like it has outwardly radiating lines on the graticule like this, coming out from the pole, and the arcs of circles coming this way for the parallels. So three basic types. They're handy to remember, but they're certainly not the only types. And as I'm going to show you in very quickly, there are lots of variations on these pretty much right off the bat. One more point to note is that in each case, when we had a cylinder and the cone, we had to split it somewhere. So we had to interrupt the projection at some point. When you interrupt the projection, you've got like one hemisphere on one side, one on the other side. Theoretically, every point along here is also equivalent to every point along here. It's a strange kind of discontinuity. All right. Now, let me introduce you to this. This is like what takes two lectures in Geography 12. I do it in about 10 minutes here. No flat map can be both equivalent and conformal. So this introduces one of the most important elements about map projections. Let's define those two terms, first of all. What does conformal mean? Well, in conformal maps, we preserve the property of shape. And shape locally, let me get my globe back, put it away too early. If we think about shape locally, let's concentrate just on the little tiny places on the Earth's surface where the graticule meets. If I zoom right in on the globe and look at it, the two points meet at right angles. Okay. If the two points also meet at right angles on the globe, map, then the property of direction at that point has been preserved. So north is still straight up, east is still out that way, south is still down, etc. That's not going to be the case everywhere on every type of projection. Why would we want to conform maps to be conformal? Well, they preserve local shape. It makes things look approximately correct in terms of the shape of continents over small areas. I don't claim this over the entire map. But also directions work out. So direction that we might read off of a compass or calculate from a map is still going to be true on the ground at any specific location. Let's go over to another property, equivalence, or the so-called equal area property. Another thing we can think about in terms of the map is if we look at any one of the cells within the graticule, it has a finite area on the ground. So it's 5 degrees by 5 degrees, or if we had a more detailed map, 1 degree by 1 degree, or on a topographic map, 7.5 minutes by 7.5 minutes. That's a finite area on the ground, but notice that area depends upon our latitude. Okay, what we would like is that areas on the globe are preserved as we go to the transformation to the map, so that the correct area of features are shown on the ground. If we've achieved that, we call it the equivalence property, equivalence of areas, and we have an equal area projection. Take a look at the Mercator projection, which is in the upper right-hand side. You probably saw it on the wall in your grade school classroom. Very popular map, and it has definite use in terms of navigation. It's useful because directions are preserved on the map, or reasonably well, with some exceptions. Over short distances, they're preserved reasonably well. But to do that, we've had to throw the property of area right out of the window. Okay? You look at, say, Greenland. On this, it looks bigger than Brazil. Well, that's certainly not the case. Greenland's much, what, 1/8 of the size of Brazil, something like that. Look at Antarctica. You wondered how we could ever have possibly left that much land mass relatively undiscovered. Well, it's not that big. It's much smaller. Okay, so we have distorted area on this. We've distorted it especially in the high latitudes. And we can do that. We can see why very quickly when we look at the formula. Okay, if you look at, let's say, the sinusoidal projection, which is directly beneath it, you might say this one has a lot of distortion at the poles. In fact, it comes to meet the poles at a point. But then that's what the poles are. It's all the graticule meeting at a single point on the ground. Say, when you're standing at the North Pole, every single direction is south. Yes?
So what's the surface for that projection?
All of these projections now are on the sphere. And the reason for that is that I really don't want to inflict the formula changes that are necessary for the ellipsoid upon you. So for now, just assume that we're only 1 in 298 off anyway. So it's close. In fact, the formulae for the ellipsoid are a little bit more complex, but not much more. But leave it to the professionals who worry about these kinds of things to mess with the ellipsoids.
And in the
The sinusoidal? That's actually what's called a pseudo-cylindrical projection, okay? Because it's cylindrical type, but it's actually not, you can't create an analytical equivalent of it, or an analog equivalent of it on a real cylinder. No, not at all. It depends on how we scale the graticule. Okay. Okay, so equivalence then means equal area property is preserved. And notice that to preserve the equal area property, we really have to mess with directions. So if we look at the sinusoidal, along the middle of the projection, we have a line that runs straight up and down, and it meets the equator at 90 degrees. But the further we go away from that, the smaller the angle becomes. So we're distorting the angle of the ellipsoid to preserve area. Okay. And then we can try and satisfy everybody. We can choose projections that preserve shape to some degree, and therefore direction and scale, and preserve area to some degree, but don't satisfy anybody. They're in the middle. We call them compromise projections. And many of the most popular projections in regular use are, in fact, compromise projections. The Goode's homolysine, for example, which was first designed in the 1920s and has been used in atlases and all over the place ever since. As you can see, it's a projection with several interruptions pieced together. It's actually two different projections stuck together at different latitudes. And if you look very carefully, you can see the latitude lines where the two projections are joined. The Robinson projection is just simply like an average. It's an eyeball average between other projections because they wanted a flat line along the poles and a general ellipsoidal shape to the projection. So it's Arthur Robinson designed that one, as he said, literally by drawing nice graticules and cutting out the shape of the continents on other maps and moving them around until he thought they looked nice. Okay, so let's come back to my statement on the left-hand side. We can try and be equivalent. In other words, we can try and preserve directions and shape on our map, or we can try and preserve area on our map, but we can't do them both at the same time. Some applications, like navigation, direction may be critical. We should choose an equivalent projection. A conformal projection. Some, like let's say we've got a world map with pixels on it and we're counting up the total amount of rainforest on the planet, we would want each pixel to be of equal area. So we would choose an equal area projection on which to do that kind of calculation. Okay, so far we've met developable form and this idea of conformality and equivalence. Now, the next thing we can do is change what's called the aspect of the projection. That's fairly easy to illustrate. Let's say I'm going to make a conic projection. I can wrap the cylinder around the equator, in which case the poles are going to be at the top, and the equator is going to be a straight line across the middle of the map. This is what's called an equatorial aspect. Or I can put the pole, I can rotate it 90 degrees. So the equator now goes up and down, the poles are at either side. When I draw this map, I'm now going to have a line down the middle with both poles on it, and I'm going to get increasingly distorted of the part of the Earth as I move towards the edges of the cylinder. Okay, that's called a polar aspect, or I can put it at, a transverse aspect. Or I can tilt it at some other angle, say any old angle, 30 degrees, 45 degrees, wrap the cylinder around and I end up with what's called an oblique projection. Oblique projections turn out to have a rather limited set of uses, although 3 weeks ago I gave a paper introducing a new oblique projection. The most famous one is called the space oblique projection, and it's designed to be able to map the ground tracks of satellites or spacecraft. Otherwise, they don't get a heck of a lot of use. So I've already introduced these ideas, the projection that preserves the shape of features across the map, but again, only locally, remember it's not going to work across an entire continent, is called conformality, or these are called conformal projections. Projection that preserves the area of feature, preserves the area of features across the map is called equal area or equivalent. So if I if I were using a world map to calculate the land areas of each country, or province, or state, I would definitely want to choose an equivalent projection on which to make that calculation. No flat map can be both equivalent and conformal, and most fall between the two as compromises. And I like to think of a spring, like one of those exercise things, you know. And you can pull it apart like this. On one end, the map perfectly reflects the shape and directions. The other end, it perfectly reflects area. And I can try and pull any given projection towards one of the extremes, but to do so, I'm always going to have to pull against the other property. So I'm always going to lose more and more ability to display area accurately as I get more and more close to displaying directions correctly, and vice versa. The more I pull away from displaying directions correctly, to display area correctly, those directions get more and more messed up, and the map gets more and more curvy. Okay? Many projections fall between the two, and we call them compromise, and as I just said, some of the most famous projections are indeed compromise. And then lastly, this sort of, again, the bottom home, take-home part of this. If we're going to put two maps together, let's say we've got two small parts of a large map that are on different projections, they're not going to fit together like that unless they're on the same projection. Okay, so the first thing we need to do is to make sure the projections are the same. Yeah?
We're trying to figure out for conical projections.
Mm-hmm.
Say if you had one conical projection from the north pole and one from the south,
mm-hmm.
and then you sort of match them and try to make a compromise to try to lower the distortion,
mm-hmm.
would that be a fairly accurate
map? Yeah. It wouldn't be a bad map at all. Fairly accurate versus accurate, those are distinctions. I'll show you some that look a little bit like that in a minute. There are probably, I mean, just as a wild guess, I would say there are over 1,000 different types of map projections, so many that people publish entire catalogs of them, and some of them are just, you know, exotic and weird. Some of them have very definite functions. For example, within Islam, there's a whole series of projections called the Qibla projections, which are designed to find east from anywhere in the world, because that's the direction towards which you pray. And there's a whole very advanced set of map projections designed for determining which direction is east. So each map projection has a different function. We'll meet a few more, and keep yours in mind, because conic projections we're going to improve on in just a second. Okay, so I talked about edge maps. Here comes the other problem. If I've got two maps, say, of North America, put them that way, and I want to now overlay the two maps to make them two different data layers in the database, they need to be on the same projection or they're not going to merge. Okay. So that's the sort of the take-home lesson about projections. Back to conics, since we were talking about that. I mentioned secant projections very briefly, and secant projections can be done in a very large number of different ways. I mean, imagine, let me see which slides I brought. Yeah, okay. Let's stick with the conic in this case. Let's say I've got that cone, and I'm going to put this over the world. Just letting it be tangent on the planet right now, I'll have a single parallel where the cone and the Earth touch each other. So I've got a scale relationship 1:1. There is no distortion on the projection. But now let's imagine that I could push this globe partially through the cone. Okay, part of the cone's going to be on the inside of the Earth, and I can project outwards onto it. Part will be on the outside, and I can project inwards onto the cone. And I end up with more than one line of tangency. Okay. We've got more than one line of tangency there. Those are called standard parallels if they coincide with parallels. Yeah.
Would you need like two light sources?
You would indeed need two light sources, but unfortunately, the more conceptual you get with projections, the less the analog model works. So don't assume that there's always a light projection equivalent of any given map projection. In fact, many of them are just equations, and they have no equivalent. Okay, what I got here is a projection where the cone is cutting through, in this case, North America. So I've got two standard parallels. One, in this case, I've chosen them quite carefully to frame the land area of the United States. So what can I say about those two lines, the two standard parallels? Well, the distortion along those lines is zero. Zero distortion of area, zero distortion of shape and direction. That's a very nice property to have. As I go south from the standard parallel, let's say from the northern one of the two standard parallels, my distortion increases until about halfway, and then it begins to decrease again as I get towards the second standard parallel. Okay, so what I've done here by bracketing the area I want to map carefully with standard parallels and using a conic, a secant conic projection, I've minimized the distortion over the area that I want to make a map out of. Okay, so I can control not just the amount of error due to distortion of the two properties, I can control where the error lies and the pattern of error across the map. Okay, so these are standard parallels that come out in secant. Now, secant map projections can work in any aspect. Here we've illustrated them with conic projections. Imagine that this consisted of plasma or mist or something, and I could just push it straight through the Earth. Again, the parts of the Earth outside I project in, parts that are inside here I project out. So I end up with my projection. So at the top I've got an equatorial aspect cylindrical projection. This looks like a Miller cylindrical, I think. Yeah, I believe it is. Or I could rotate to 90 degrees. Remember that aspect in which we had the poles, in this case at the two ends of the, at the middle here, we have the South Pole, and on the two edges we have the North Pole. We have a straight line going down the middle, and straight lines where we cross the equator, but all other points are curved on the graticule in this projection. So this is called the transverse aspect, and it has some nice properties we're going to meet in just a minute. Or we can go with an oblique cylindrical, and I would advocate that oblique cylindrical projections are probably good for wallpaper and one or two very specific applications, and that's about it. Okay, so let's just review one more thing about map projections before we move on. An ideal projection for a coordinate system, one in which we're going to assume that x and y are orthogonal, or at 90 degrees to each other, would be one where the projection preserves the fact that the graticule is also at 90 degrees. Okay, so that the assumption of x and y being Cartesian coordinates is also valid on the projection. But because of that, we're going to have to fight against that property continuously. So what is a coordinate system? Coordinate system is a standardized method for assigning codes to locations so that the locations can be found using the codes alone. Okay, so there are lots of ways of assigning what are called geocodes to locations that are spatial. 93106 is the zip code associated with the campus. Okay, it's an effective geocode, 5 digits, and we can get down to a relatively small area. But it's not really small enough, it's the entire campus. In most grid systems and in most coordinate systems, we want to be able to get down to at least a meter, and ideally better than a meter. Okay, fortunately we have standardized coordinate systems. We can always use relative coordinate systems, and in fact when I first came to the campus, I was aghast to learn that all surveying on this campus up until about the 1990s had used a completely arbitrary grid system where they just defined a point as the origin, the local origin, and then everything was measured on a plane in feet, east, west, and north, south from that point. So the points for UCSB campus were specific to UCSB campus. They didn't translate to anywhere else, and they didn't tell you where the campus was with respect to the Earth. So standardized systems don't do that. They are generic. They work ideally across the entire planet, and they give us absolute locations. There's no ambiguity. We, given the sufficient information of the coordinate, we can go exactly to the point that corresponds to that coordinate. And there's not two points, there's not ambiguity about that point, it's exactly that point. Okay, a map captured in the units of a paper sheet on which it's printed is based on relative locations in map millimeters or inches. And that's not really what we want. So if I had a map and I was trying to have you get to point this point here, I hope that doesn't go onto my tie, I can measure off the distance from this on the x-axis, I can measure off the distance on the y-axis, but those lengths would be with respect to this piece of paper. If I then went and say, took the map and enlarged it by a factor of two and did the same calculation, all the numbers would be increased by a factor of two. We don't want that to happen. We want to be absolute relative to the Earth itself, not to any particular map or sheet of paper. Okay? In coordinate systems that you used in mathematics, the x direction and the y direction are at 90 degrees to each other, and x is left and right, and y is up and down. We have our own terminology for cartography. Left and right we call easting, and up and down we call northing. You might say, what happened to south and west? Well, that's easy. In cartography, we always move the origin so it's outside of where we're interested to the lower left-hand side. So our positive directions are always going east, and our positive directions in y are always going north. So we talk about eastings and northings, and not southings and westings. That is that we make both values positive, and note that that's in contradiction to what we just learned about the International Meridian Conference, which decided that west longitudes were negative and south latitudes were negative. Okay, let's show a projection, and I'll use it to introduce the first global coordinate system that I'm going to deal with here, the Universal Transverse Mercator System. Okay. Now the Transverse Mercator is a conformal projection. Mercator is a conformal. The Mercator, the equatorial Mercator, represents the graticule as meeting at 90 degrees. But the straight line center along the equator goes left to right on the map. And that's the point of tangency, so that's where the zero error is. Now, if we rotate the whole thing 90 degrees, in other words, we take the transverse aspect, we get a projection that looks like this. That's on the screen right now. The central meridian, or the line at the center of this particular part of the map, is at 120 degrees west, and the 120th meridian is actually not so far. As you drive 101 out towards Gaviota, there's a bank of trees right by El Refugio, and you actually cross the 120th meridian as you go past there. We always thought it should be painted on the road or something. There is a geocache there we placed, if you want to go and find it. If we look at that zone there between 120 west and 114 west on the transverse Mercator projection, let's have a look at that slice. Well, first of all, it's widest at the equator. It gets narrower as we go towards the poles. But otherwise, it's not bad in terms of being straight up and down and left and right. So if we were to overprint a grid onto this, this wouldn't be a bad approximation of x and y, or orthogonal axes. Notice that that's a zone that's, or that's a part of the map that's 6 degrees wide. Look at what's happening as we move north and south along that green strip. Our assumption that that x and y map directly onto x and y on the map becomes less and less valid, especially at the poles where it's nonsense because the poles are still points. Okay. Also, though, as we go further and further away from the middle of the map, you'll notice that what should be straight lines become increasingly curved. So we get more and more distortion due to direction on here, even though it's a conformal map, because we're moving away from the central meridian for this projection. Okay. So the universal transverse Mercator projection system, or coordinate system, takes advantage of this fact. And it simply says, let's divide the whole world up into zones. We'll have 120 of them. We'll make each one 6 degrees wide. We'll have 60 of them. We'll make each one 6 degrees wide. We'll start numbering them at the 180th meridian. And we'll just continue numbering. So when we cross the Greenwich Meridian, we'll be at zone 30. It's halfway through the 60. And then we'll continue on for the rest of the world. Each zone will have its own central meridian that goes down the center of the zone. So we're going to draw the world on 60 different transverse Mercator projections. So the first one would be 180 degrees west to 174 degrees west, and its central meridian would be 177 degrees west, halfway between the two. Then we're going to draw that slice of the Earth on its own projection, and we're going to assign coordinates to it. So let's assume that we can slice out one of those zones. In this case, it's zone 14, the one that goes through New York. And we're going to project it onto this slice. We're going to get rid of the areas where there's most distortion. We're going to do that by truncating at 80 degrees south. So we're just simply going to say the universal transverse Mercator projection does not work for south of 80 south. That's pretty far south. That's pretty much most of Antarctica with a little bit of the Ross ice shelf and the peninsula up towards South America not included. And then we're going to translate or cut off in the northern hemisphere at 84 degrees north. 84 degrees north means that it cuts off just north of Svalbard, that well-known island, the last outpost of civilization as we go towards the Arctic. Okay, those two we're going to deal with in a different coordinate system that I'll show you in just a minute, the universal polar stereographic projection. Okay. We're going to then take the remainder of the Earth, reproject it into those 60 zones, with central meridians running down the middle of each one, so that we minimize the total amount of error that we're going to get within them. And in fact, it reduces the error to about one part in 2,000 at the highest point amount of error. And then we assign coordinates to it. One nice thing to remember, we've already learned this fact in the last lecture, that if we did start at the South Pole and went to the equator, where's my little globe? If we started here and went here, we'd have gone through 10 million meters. If we start here and go to here, we'd have gone through another 10 million meters.